Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchuk. On today's show, we'll feature two interviews. One with Davis Mack Iyala, a noted Nigerian political activist and gay rights advocate working in the politics of the Anglican Church. We'll also talk with Josh Thomas, national coordinator of Davis Mack Iyala's 2007 speaking tour across the United States. But now, a selection of news about media and democracy entitled Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
A landmark study of radio ownership in the United States published by Free Press makes a compelling case for more media diversity. Off the Dial meticulously analyzed the ownership and control of every radio station in America and found that less than one out of every eight stations is owned by women or people of color. You can find women-owned stations in just 40% of all local radio markets and minority-owned stations in just about half. What's worse, female and non-white-owned radio stations are more likely to be independent and more likely to provide diversity in programming. It was independent stations just like these that were decimated in the wave of consolidation that swept through the radio industry following the passage of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, meaning this problem has accelerated over the last 10 years and current media policies are only making it worse. This has FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein gravely concerned.
What we see here, the study is extremely alarming. Minorities and women have been left off the dial because the FCC's pursued policies that are far off the mark.
Commissioner Michael Copps calls it, quote, a national disgrace.
It's not that they're riding in the back of the bus when it comes to media ownership. They're not even on the bus.
What's more, according to Brent Wilkes, the executive director of the League of United Latin American Citizens, is that the homogenization of programming by mostly white male station owners is detrimentally skewing debate on the important political questions of our time, such as immigration.
The lack of diversity, the lack of local content, actually is moving the policy debate in an anti-minority, anti-women agenda because the real people out there in the communities don't have access to the airwaves, and the local minority is getting that access because the owners of these stations provide that to them.
Mark Lloyd with the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights says examination of radio diversity is long overdue and our public officials owe us more.
In 1996, Congress required the FCC to study the problems of ownership in small businesses and minorities and women in the media industry. The FCC has not done this study.
Changing the radio ownership landscape in favor of creating more diversity at the local level may go a long way toward diversifying content on the dial, though hip-hop historian and journalist Davey D says simply changing the gender and color of those at the top of the currently conglomerated radio industry will not solve the problem of women and minorities being stereotyped and misrepresented in the media.
Seeing a station like Radio 1, which is often lauded because Kathy Hughes is a black woman who owns a lot of stations, yet she has a lot of complaints when we have our meetings around media because she's just as bad as the Clear Channels.
How can this problem be addressed? The FCC could promulgate new rules to encourage more local ownership among radio stations, and Congress could re-implement tax incentives for larger broadcasters to sell off stations to the underrepresented, or re-establish national caps on how many stations a single company can own. Gloria Steinem, founder of Ms. Magazine and co-founder of Greenstone Media, a talk radio network wholly focused on women, says this new research may help push a fix to the fore.
It has become bad enough so that it has to get better. It has nowhere to go downward.
To learn more about the state of radio ownership involving women and people of color, you can read the full report at www.stopbigmedia.com and click on the front page link Off the Dial.
Is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting on another hunt for objectivity? CPB CEO Patricia Harrison says she's tried hard to undo the damage done by a former partisan plant which used to hold her job. That was Kenneth Tomlinson, best known for going on a witch hunt against so-called liberal bias in public broadcast programming, conduct which brought the ire of the CPB's own Inspector General and Congress and resulted in him stepping away from the CPB under a cloud of disgrace. Although Patricia Harrison herself used to chair the Republican National Committee, she's gained the respect of many NPR and PBS member stations by making public broadcasting funding and management more transparent. Now she's asking the deans of 9 journalism schools to help define what the words objectivity and balance mean in the context of public broadcasting. However, Harrison admits the CPB does not have the power to impose such standards on public radio and TV programming, nor does she have an agenda of her own.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
On Friday, March 2nd, the government announced its decision on the royalty rates internet radio webcasters must pay the music industry to license the music we play. The problem is the new rates amount to well over 100% of even the most successful webcasters' online radio revenues. This means unless the rates are changed, most or all of your favorite internet radio stations will be bankrupt and the industry will go silent. Let your representatives in Congress know you want them to step in and do something to save internet radio. Visit SaveTheStreams.org today to sign our online petition and learn how to contact your representatives in Congress. Get the facts at SaveTheStreams.org. Thanks.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. We now feature the first of 2 interviews in this episode of The Ministry of Truth. In this first interview, we talk with Davis Mack Iyala, a noted Nigerian political activist and gay rights advocate working in the politics of the Anglican Church. We are joined on the phone with Mr. Davis Mack Iyala, founder of Changing Attitude Nigeria and a prominent activist from Nigeria who is talking with us on the phone from Chicago. Davis Mack Iyala, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Welcome to the show, Davis Mack Iyala.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about Changing Attitude Nigeria? What is the group and what does it do?
Changing Attitude is a coordinating organ of LGBT people in the Anglican Church of Nigeria.
I see. And it's my understanding that the Anglican Church is currently in the matter of a dispute with a gentleman by the name of Peter Akinola. Could you tell us a little bit more about him and what the dispute is?
Archbishop Peter Akinola is the primate and Archbishop of all Nigeria of the Anglican Church, and he has taken it upon himself to make gay and lesbian people scapegoating and to move a war against us in the worldwide Anglican Communion.
And how has Changing Attitude Nigeria responded to what Peter Akinola has done?
First step, he has denied the existence of gays and lesbians as members of the church, and Changing Attitude has come to refute all that he is saying.
And how does this tie into the status of LGBT rights within Nigeria generally?
Yes, even though he is the Anglican Archbishop of Nigeria, his campaign is totally against all LGBT people in Nigeria.
In what ways?
Because he is supporting a bill that will totally make us an illegal citizen in our country, that will send us to prison and send our family and anyone who listens to us, or even you that is trying to interview me now, could be sent to prison if that bill would have had its way through.
What's the progress of the bill now?
The bill is as good as dead, except this new government will reintroduce it.
And I take it that the death of this bill is probably due to a credit to organizing that you and others have done, is that right?
Of course, we are the living faces of gays and lesbian people in Nigeria. And we cry to people and the world and human rights organizations like ILGA and the European Parliament and other human rights organizations supported and put pressure on the government of Nigeria.
And it's apparently had some success. How does this connect to issues regarding human rights in Nigeria more generally? I mean, there has been some criticism, certainly from human rights organizations worldwide, that the issue of human rights is an ongoing concern in Nigeria. In what way does this tie into other larger human rights issues?
In Nigeria, where our oil is supposed to make us rich and give better life for people, the church and the government are not, especially the Archbishop of Nigeria, is not talking about that. A bill that will that says people do not have rights to meet, no right of association, no right to speak, you don't have right to defend yourself. That is the worst, the human bill that anybody can think of, and so it affects everybody. This bill, in fact, they started as a story of same sex, but it even indirectly affects both the straights.
Yes, speaking of, in fact, that's actually a good point that you raised regarding the oil industry. Nigeria, as I understand it, is the largest oil exporter in Africa. Is that correct?
Sure.
And since that's the case, there are tie-ins, especially with regards to the work that you and others have been doing regarding Peter Akinola and Changing Attitude Nigeria and the issue of gay rights generally, that also ties in certainly to politics here in the United States. Our current president, George W. Bush, has been re-elected in 2004 as a result of basically anti-gay campaigns that helped to increase the vote of usually anti-gay supporters, which helped to provide the necessary measure of votes in the United States. And since also George W. Bush has background and ties to the oil industry in the United States, that this has a very interesting connection with the United States, both in terms of oil and in terms of the politics of anti-gay rhetoric. What are your thoughts about this?
That is correct, and that is the connection why Archbishop Akinola will leave all the problem that he needs to solve in Nigeria to come down to America to install a bishop and to try to split the Episcopal Church and to set up confusion in the worldwide Anglican communion using the issue of human sexuality.
Who is the person who you said could be installed?
He has already come here to install Bishop Martin Means as the bishop in America, which is contrary to what he's supposed to do. He has no right to come to America to install a Nigerian bishop.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Martin Means is his name?
Yes, Martin Means is a British-born priest who is serving here in the Episcopal Church as the issue of human sexuality get deeper and deeper. Only God knows his connection with Archbishop Akinola, why he got him ordained in Nigeria as his missionary bishop for convocation of Anglicans in North America, and he is right there in Virginia. So there is a link between the American right-wing politicians and the Archbishop and Nigerian oil bigwigs of whatever that is going on.
And it would seem that the struggles both in the United States regarding opposition to right-wing political groups and also those of similar efforts for right-wing political groups within the church and within Nigeria, it seems, have these connections.
It's a connection, and there are foundations from America here that are funding and sponsoring all these things seriously.
Could you tell us a little bit more about these foundations? Who are they and how are they funding this?
We have one that we have done, and we call Following the Money. What's the name of this foundation? American Foundation, where the money is coming from.
Okay.
We have one. Yeah. I can give you Institute for Religion and Democracy. I mean, if you follow, go online to search Following the Money, you will see it.
Certainly. This also kind of ties in with those of struggles in other countries generally, especially where you would see depend on developed countries in the West, particularly in Europe and in North America generally, you're finding much greater rights for LGBT people, but less so within developing countries or within, like, for example, in Eastern Europe. There have been serious repression of pride parades in both Poland and in Russia, for example. Could you talk about the status about the struggles you're involved with within the larger international scope?
An American gay is no different from a Nigerian gay. Likewise, a gay in Russia is no different from a gay in Nigeria. The struggle is all the same. Those who are rising against us are all the same. And we have link with like this Russian group that has just faced this problem as they try go on with their pride. We have link with them and we are in solidarity with them.
That's excellent. Let me ask, you are going on a tour across the United States. Could you talk a little bit about this tour? Where have you gone and what's been the response that you've been getting on this tour?
I have 20 cities and 55 events to cover in the U.S. I have covered about 5 cities, mainly Athens in Ohio, Cleveland, Columbus, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and now I am in Chicago. So far, all the places that I've been to have been welcome, and people are listening seriously and are paying attention. I think that Nigerians know more about America than America know about them, so people are giving attention to what I have to say.
What other cities are on your itinerary in the United States?
Pardon?
What other cities do you plan to go to in the United States?
Oh, I have too many cities to go to in the United States. if you want, I could just give you Right now I'm in Chicago, as you may know.
Yes.
And then I have I have New York.
Okay.
I have California.
Mm-hmm.
I have there are so many.
Well, certainly a prominent national tour where you're going to a lot of major cities across the United States.
Almost all the major cities. There are just so many in the itinerary here.
But you're just doing a tour of the United States, or are you going on tour to other countries?
After the United States, I'm leaving straight to England, where I will join in the General Synod of the Church of England.
It's also my understanding that you've been forced to flee Nigeria, is that correct?
Yes, as I make progress with my work and more people get to join us, I begin to receive serious death threats that I am forced to go on exile now.
Who have been levying the death threats against you?
I know that all those who are sending threats to me are members of the Anglican Church of Nigeria. I have no reason to suspect anyone outside the church because it is the church that has exposed me to all these dangers by their smear campaign.
Do you have any feeling that there might be a chance you might be able to return to Nigeria anytime soon?
I hope that what I am doing should make impression that I go back to live in Nigeria, my country, one day. And I hope it will be so.
One more question. For Americans and for listeners who would be listening not just on the radio in Chicago, but on the internet through internet transmissions and podcasts, and for those listeners who would want to be involved in your work, what would you recommend that they do?
I recommend that they join to partner with us to begin to rise against those people who want to shut down the existence of LGBT people. Our problem is not only an Anglican issue, it is an issue for all LGBT people all over the world.
We've been speaking on the phone with Mr. Davis Makiala, the founder of Changing Attitude Nigeria and a prominent activist from Nigeria who has been talking to us on the phone from Chicago. The website of Changing Attitude Nigeria is www.changingattitude.org.uk. Davis Makiala, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That was an interview with Davis Makiala, a noted Nigerian political activist and gay rights advocate working in the politics of the Anglican Church. And now, an interview with Josh Thomas, national coordinator of Davis Makiala's 2007 speaking tour across the United States. I am speaking on the phone with Josh Thomas, who is the national coordinator of the U.S. speaking tour of Mr. Davis Makiala. Josh Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Talk a little bit about the speaking tour. We had heard a little bit about the speaking tour of where you've gone and where you're going from Mr. Davis Makiala. Could you expound on that a bit?
Sure. We're doing two types of events, speaking at Episcopal churches and also community events to educate Americans about conditions for gay and lesbian people in Nigeria and all of West Africa. So these events kind of fall in those two categories.
What's the parameters of the timing of the tour? When did it start and when do you expect it to end?
Davis arrived in the United States on May the 16th. He will be doing over 20 cities, over 55 events, concluding, climaxing really, in Washington, D.C. And on the 3rd of July, he will leave the United States for the United Kingdom on July the 5th.
We had talked a little bit about with Davis about some of the responses that he's been receiving, and the impression that Davis had mentioned was that it was generally fairly positive. Would you agree with that? What's your impression of the people's responses?
Their responses in person and live are invariably favorable. There has been a little activity in the right-wing blogosphere, and we're kind of monitoring that. But when people have a chance to meet Davis and to listen to him and to understand the persecution taking place among Nigerian LGBTs, then fair-minded Americans respond positively.
And what's been the response within the Episcopal churches, especially regarding the potential possible split over the issue of gay rights within the church?
The Episcopal Church in the United States is overwhelmingly in favor of inclusion of LGBT people. When you talk about a split, that implies a 50-50 tearing down the middle, and it's nothing like that. That's why we were able to put together this tour for Davis so quickly. I was literally overwhelmed with invitations for him. There are only less than 40 Episcopal churches that have broken away out of something like 7,500 nationwide. So split maybe is not quite the right word. Episcopalians who are loyal are overwhelmingly backing Davis. What we aim to do when he speaks in churches is to call to account those secessionist parishes who probably don't realize that they are supporting a smear campaign against a faithful gay Anglican in Nigeria, and the suppression and persecution by the Nigerian Anglican Church of all LGBT Anglicans and all citizens in that country. We want the Americans who are, they may be conservative, they don't have to endorse every plank of a gay rights platform, but if they are going to leave the Episcopal Church, we want to know exactly who and what they're supporting, because it's a campaign that virtually no American who's used to the Bill of Rights would ever support.
Could you talk a little bit, a personal question, about how you particularly got involved in not only the speaking tour, but also within the issues raised by the speaking tour?
I operate a prayer website called dailyoffice.org. This offers Episcopal prayers online. As I studied the issues that are involved in the secession of a few of these right-wing parishes in the United States, I ran across the name of the Archbishop of Nigeria, Mr. Akinola, and realized that he was very much at the center of all of this conflict. And then I ran across Davis's name. I found out that he was being persecuted, that he was receiving death threats, and I thought it was important to see to it that he was moved to a safe place. So I contacted a website called Thinking Anglicans, which is run out of the UK. I knew that they knew how to reach Davis. He and I began corresponding. I checked out his reputation with people that I trust. Suggested to him that there was plenty of support for him to come to America for a while and stop living in fear. And it's turned out exactly that way.
Could you talk about the trajectory? You're going on a tour in the United States. You're expecting to go to the UK, as you've mentioned. What's then expected to happen, or is that too soon to tell?
It's a little too soon to tell. Besides addressing the big church convention there, Davis will have a few speaking engagements, just like he has in the United States, and then he's going to take a couple of weeks off, because I've packed more activity and interviews and speeches into his schedule to take advantage of this brief time in the United States, and he's going to need a rest just like I will.
Your work is admirable, and keep on doing the good work. Let me just ask one last question. What would you encourage, besides, of course, spreading the word and getting involved in the speaking tour, what would you encourage Americans and interested listeners to do about the issue?
The persecution that Davis is facing in Nigeria is one thing, but the real problem is that he is just one gay man from that place. And millions of LGBTs in Nigeria are facing the same persecution. He happens to be the most out, but everybody who is gay or lesbian in Nigeria is going through the same thing. Therefore, we've got Davis here for a short time, and we know he is safe, but they are not. So my organization is raising funds to begin to use communication to support the people back home in Africa for him, to set up websites, to do videos and podcasts, to support them. And the second major thing that we ask Americans to do is to become aware of the issues of corruption, petrodollars, and church schism going on in Nigeria, and to see to it that when a bill is introduced in the Nigerian parliament that exploits the land in Nigeria, that keeps the people poor, and that uses gay rights as a wedge issue to keep the current government in power, that we join the U.S. State Department, the United Nations, and the European Parliament to oppose those kinds of measures. Even though we're a long ways away, America buys a lot of oil from Nigeria. Therefore, American voices criticizing the Nigerian government can be very helpful.
We've been speaking with Josh Thomas, the national coordinator of the U.S. speaking tour of that of Mr. Davis Makiala, and is also the proprietor, I guess we could say, of the website dailyoffice.org. Is that correct?
That is correct. I wouldn't say proprietor because I'm not making any money off it. I'm just the lay minister who offers those prayers.
Dailyoffice.org is that website. Josh Thomas, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mitchell.
That was an interview with Josh Thomas, national coordinator of Davis Makiala's 2007 speaking tour across the United States. Both interviews with Davis Makiala and Josh Thomas were recorded on Monday, June 4, 2007, in New York City from the offices of the Association of American University Presses. Special thanks to Brennan McLaughlin and the staff of the AAUP in New York for their assistance. An announcement of an upcoming event. The Benton Foundation, the Chicago Community Trust, and the Community Media Workshop are co-sponsoring the first Community Media Summit in Chicago on June 14th and 15th, 2007. The conference seeks to understand and examine the voices and content that comprise community media and to imagine and explore the potentials of community media for serving basic human needs, particularly with the increased adoption of internet and computer technologies to produce media. The conference will be taking place on Thursday, June 14th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. and Friday, June 15th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Columbia College in downtown Chicago at the Columbia Film Row Cinema, 1104 South Wabash Avenue, 8th floor. To learn more, please visit the website of the Community Media Workshop at www.newstips.org. Again, the website, www.newstips.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.